The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Matt
Boone Media Productions.
You remembered them fondly, and then they were gone. And now you want to know who, what, where, when, why.
We having fun, yeah.
Why It Ended with Robbie E. and Matt Coon.
What up, guys? We're here. It's Wednesday. Hashtag Why It Ended Wednesday. And myself, Matt Coon, we're in the house fresh off last week's episode with Jimmy. Last week's informative episode with Jimmy Corderas, which I thought was really, really awesome. I think a lot of people, it's the kind of interview you didn't expect it to be such a in-depth story and have all the information that it did. But I really enjoyed it.
I mean, we're on a streak of interviews where people are like, and they're blowing up the numbers. People are like, man, I wasn't sure about this, but we're seeking people like this out that have great stories, like Candace Michelle, like Shannon Moore. And of course, last week, I thought was one of our best interviews ever with Jimmy Corderas. And now we're going to get back to someone kind of that was in the eye of the camera not too long ago. Who do we have this week, Robbie?
We have Santino Marella, which... you know, I know the thing that I'm looking forward to hearing the most is the Jim Cornette story. How about you?
I definitely want to hear the Jim Cornette story. And also, you know, I hope we can talk about what happened last year in Detroit. You know, they got in a little kerfuffle, if you will. But what he's an interesting guy because he's got this shoot background. He basically was shot to the top almost right away. And then was given all these crazy characters and made the absolute best with them. I'm surprised, Robbie, he wasn't given like a New Jersey Shore type dude.
Well, I mean, he is the example of anything could happen in wrestling. Wasn't signed to a contract, then he was, and then all of a sudden he's the Intercontinental Champion. It's insane. So it's going to be cool to hear how it all went down in a flash. And I think I've come up with the conclusion that myself, me and you, we are probably the two cockiest podcasters in history, because all we do is talk about how great our numbers are, how great our shows are and getting better every week, and just how great everything is about us.
And not only that, we're not just in the podcast business, Robbie. We change lives on...
Well, we do.
On...
Oh, I get it. On why?
It ended...
Bro, you can't.
Santino Marella coming up next.
Unwind ended.
Stop using your hand. .com.
Now, of course, you know by now about our great sponsor, Pleasure Products USA. They are a huge supporter of Why It Ended and also your online destination for innovative quality and affordable items geared towards men's sexual pleasure. As you know, or you probably should know, their signature product is the 3V Starlet Stroker. That's right, the 3V Starlet Stroker. It has an amazing, realistic internal texture, multiple vibration settings, and for the finishing maneuver, an actual voice of an adult film star is recorded to the device to make more than the crowd pop. Now, if you're not sure about this, and this is all new to you, check this out. You can try a free, that's right, a free stroker. All you have to do is just pay the shipping and handling of $6.95. For just $6.95 shipping and handling, you can get a free stroker. All you got to do is go to pleasureproductsusa.com/promo. That's slash promo. And enter the coupon code FISTBUMP. So whether you're going to get the 3V Scarlet Stroker or you just want to dip your toe in the water, so to speak, with this free stroker for only $6.95 shipping and handling, make sure to check out our good friends at StopUsingYourHand.com. Now remember, to get that free stroker, go to PleasureProductsUSA.com/promo. And the coupon code is FISTBUMP. That's pretty funny. But you know what's not funny? PleasureProductsUSA.StopUsingYourHand.com. Today. All right, guys. So joining us this week is someone who I think is really kind of the epitome of what this show's about. And today we have somebody you all remember. His name is Anthony Corelli. But of course, you might know him as Santino Marella. Anthony, do you go by Santino or Anthony?
Well, these days, Anthony.
because Santino is a dork and I'm cool. No, I'm just kidding. But I don't own the intellectual property of Santino, so it's
Hey, man, well, thank you for doing this, and I just want to apologize on air so everyone can know that Matt Kuhn has changed the time on you 3 different times. He messes with all our guests, bro. We almost lose a lot of our guests because of him, Matt. I mean, this is so true.
That's okay. Sometimes you gotta try and jam in as much as you can in a day to get it done, and it happens.
Well, you know, Anthony, the problem is Robbie doesn't know, like you and I, you know, we have a job, you know, and so he doesn't know what that's like.
I got 5 jobs.
Hey, so growing up, man, were you, obviously you were always looked at in WWE as a funny guy. Growing up, were you a funny guy?
I'd say at school, you know, I was a class clown and, you know, yeah, I mean, you know what it is, actually, not just me. I grew up in a very funny neighborhood, a very funny high school. All my friends were all first generation Canadians and all our parents come from Europe. So we just found it funny how our parents, you know, that had strong accents and they butchered the language and It was really, honest to God, when I think of high school, I think of just a bunch of guys laughing their heads off for 5 years.
And did you and all those guys, did you like wrestling? Were you wrestling fans growing up?
Everyone was a wrestling fan when we were younger in elementary school. And, yeah, you know, my best friend was, you know, he followed WCW and ECW. And, you know, I remember I was busy doing judo, but he let me know about this guy named Goldberg and stuff like that.
So you were saying you heard about Goldberg and that kind of made you, attracted you to start watching it again?
No. I mean, I just had one friend that would always give me updates if I was away from wrestling. And, you know, like, he goes, you got to see this thing, ECW, it's crazy. And then, you know, oh my God, you got to hear about NWO. And he kind of always keep me up to date, even though I was busy doing judo.
And, you know, who would have thought that Santino Marella was kind of inspired a little bit by Goldberg. How did that turn into you started to getting training, and how did you find your way to OVW?
Well, when I was in university, I wrestled for Concordia University. And one of my best friends to this day, he was on my wrestling team, and his dad was Don Koloff, who wrestled for WWF and Calgary Stampede in the 80s. And he had this little private school. It was more of a hangout. He kind of took a couple students every few years and just would train them and stuff. And as soon as I heard that, you know, I just kind of felt like I just connected with my freaking destiny. It was a crazy feeling, actually.
And then from there, what did you do to say that you want to become a wrestler? Like, how did you approach it?
Yeah, so when the time was right, I asked Don Koloff, who I refer to as Coach. I'm like, because we were training back then in basically MMA. You know, one of my buddies was a super high-level sambo fighter. I was a national champion in judo. My buddy was a national champion in wrestling. And we would just train and grapple and show each other different things from our respective sports. And on the other side of the gym, there was a couple guys that were training pro wrestling. But these guys were like 350, like 320, like just big monsters. And I kind of thought I was too small. And then when I asked him one time, I'm like, how big was Owen Hart? Because he came from Calgary Stampede, so he knew Owen and Brett very well. And he's like, yeah, Owen was your size. And I'm like, it's my size. I'm like, so that means it's, you know, it's not going to be an obstacle, my size? And he said, yeah, no, it's not. So, I started training.
And how did that lead you to going to OVW?
Well, it was interesting. So the only connection we had at the time was in Japan. One of my friends was working for Zero One, and he wrestled at the original Battle Arts. He trained there for a year.
And who was that?
He had many different gimmick names. George Kiriakou is his name. He was like Alexander. He did like a Alexander the Great gimmick. He did Jason X. But he was 0-1. Okay. He had a big Jason mask. He was ripped, shredded. And so I just packed up and said, my objective originally was I'm going to go to Japan and bust my ass and get over to the point where they're going to, you know, in North America, kind of like the Kenny Omega situation, really, where I wanted to go get over there and then have everyone here kind of notice. And it was going great. You know, I was there. I started having a few matches. I was doing some commercial extra work. I did a little MMA. And then, like an idiot, I messed up because I was uneducated. And I overstayed one of my tourist visas by, like, whatever, by one day. It doesn't matter. Once you overstay your tourist visa, you're like, banned from that country. And originally, I was banned for 5 years. But this guy at the immigration office gave me the Iggy and said, like, December 1st, the law is going to change for the first time in, like, 100 years, and you'll only be banned for 1 year. So I had to lay low, because whatever day you departure, whatever law is in effect at that time, that's what's going to apply to you. So that's what I did, and I was banned from Japan for a year. So I'm like, I'm devastated, because this is like my plan. Like, I moved, I had an apartment, I had a scooter, I had a bicycle, that was my life, you know? And so I had to come home and reformulate the game plan. This guy told me about OVW, and I thought it was like a brand. I thought it was a company. So I called them and said, can I audition for your company? And they're like, well, it's kind of a school. And so I actually, because my mom's Métis, which is like half Native, half European, so I actually got some educational funding. I had to write a whole letter and state why this, you know, should be deserving of some funding. And because I couldn't work while I was in the U.S. And I had savings that I was living off, you know, combined with this funding. And I even got sponsored by MuscleTech. So they were giving me some products. So, we tried to maximize every dollar because I couldn't have an income. And that's it, man. I went there, the beginner's class. Well, mind you, I started wrestling late. So I'm 30. But by the time I moved to OVW, I'm 31 years old. And I don't even know how to lock up. Because we were doing, like, work shoots. And that was the genre we fell in love with. You know, I fell in love with. So, and even our gym back home, it was very grappler oriented. It wasn't really very pro wrestling-ish. I mean, I could do a hip toss, arm drag, you know, body slam, that kind of thing. And then whatever we saw on TV and try to duplicate between, like, Dynamite Kid and Tiger Mask and all that kind of stuff. So I'm 31 years old. I'm in the beginner's class. And then I graduate to the intermediate class where I meet Rip Rogers. And that is, like, the vast majority of my psychology knowledge is really from Rip Rogers.
He just changed everything. He took away all your shoot wrestling and everything and taught you pro wrestling.
Yeah. I mean, we would incorporate it as much as we could, but we still have to make sense, right? This guy gave me the tools to go make a living, period. And then once you get there, you know, you're around brilliant minds on a daily basis, Arn Anderson, Ricky Steamboat, Dean Malenko, you know, the list goes on, Mike Rotundo, and these are your agents and producers, not to mention Triple H and Vince, obviously. And then you just kind of take, you know, you have brilliant professors all around you and kind of blend it all together in a way that it all fits and come up with some of your own stuff. And once you get really good at something, you can start getting creative and experimenting. Until then, you should kind of stick to the recipe. But once you're a master chef, you can add your own spices and variations, you know.
Now, of course, you know, and we're not going to make you re-say the whole thing, because you can hear that in other places. But, you know, it early in your time at OVW, 2005, you weren't really, you know, wrestling, I don't think, on TV yet. And you were in the audience, and you were supposed to act afraid of the boogeyman. And you didn't. It made you laugh, and you laughed. And then Cornette lost his mind and shouted at you and slapped you and actually led to him being fired. And a lot of people still talk about that. But let's get in your mind at that point. As a 31-year-old dude, pretty new to wrestling, did that just kind of,
you know, was it an outlier where you thought, what the fuck is wrong with him? Or was it like, oh, this is what wrestling is like?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm already experienced at all. I'm a father, you know, I've worked in the corporate world. I've represented my country in sports, and I've been around amazing alpha male mentors, and I know what a real man is and stuff. And I wasn't supposed to sell the Boogeyman. I was literally just in the audience with my family, with my daughter. So it was my first time at OVW TV because I just got called up to the intermediate class, and they invited me to come watch the show. So I come watch the show, and, you know, no one gave me the Iggy that we're supposed to react or anything. I'm just, you know, thinking we get privileged to watch the show. And he gestures towards my daughter because he was supposed to go out the emergency exit behind us. And I thought he was going to kind of, you know, scare my daughter. You know, that's... And so I start smirking because I'm like, oh, my God, my daughter's going to shit her pants because he looks freaky, right? And so anyway, he shakes the guardrail. We all jump out of the way. And then he calls me back because he saw me smirking. And it was it really wasn't that. It was like he was about to snap anyway. And that was really just the last thing. And what's it called? Boogeyman's makeup. It was the first time he did it. And it looked great. But those lights were really hot, like the ring lights. So I was kind of melting some of the makeup a bit. And some people were giggling. And I think the whole thing didn't come off the way he wanted to. He was just really frustrated. And he was like, you know, cocked and ready to fire kind of thing. And I just happened to be the guy that, you know, he lost it on. And, you know, like, yeah, I knew what was happening. It didn't discourage me at all. You know, hey, I know if our boat capsized and we swam to a deserted island, I know he's not my boss kind of thing. He's just in the position that I knew completely he's taking advantage of the position he's in. He knew I couldn't do anything. Even if I was American, and I'd be afraid to have heat or whatever, right? Punch fucking Jim Gordon. But being I was afraid of getting deported.
Do you still have animosity towards him over it?
No, I never had animosity. I never met him before. And, you know, I do know some people that I respect their opinion, and they like him. They say, no, he's a good guy, you know. Yeah, he can lose it, but he's an okay guy. It's like, okay. And that's nice to hear, right? And I let it slide. People always ask about it because I guess it's a funny story. But the only time was when I was fresh out of surgery, and he was at a convention somewhere doing a signing, and my buddy Josh went up to him and said, did you hear Santino can't wrestle anymore? His neck's fucked up. He had surgery. And he goes, oh, you know him? And my buddy Josh, who used to live in my complex in Louisville, he's like, oh, yeah, yeah. He goes, oh, you have his number? He goes, yeah, yeah. Call him up. And then takes the phone from Josh and goes, Santino, this is Jim Cornette. And keep in mind, I'm in bandages. Like, I just came out of surgery. And he's like, I heard you can't wrestle anymore because your neck. Well, I couldn't tell you. I'm more fucking pleased. You never should have been there in the first place. You're a goddamn joke. Blah, blah, blah. You know, he's putting on a show for the marks around him, right? Like, you know, normal. And that one, I was like, you gotta be shitting me. Like, I let this guy get away with putting his fucking hands on me, and I swallow it. And then this is like, you know, 10 years later, whatever it is. This guy's gonna entertain a fucking circle of fucking marks at my expense. I'm like, get it. Anyway. So I still didn't really do anything.
That's insane, but, man. I can't believe that. I never knew that.
Yeah, so when I did the shoot interview with Rob Feinstein, I mentioned it. I just told the exact same story I told right now, and someone heard it, and someone messaged him saying, you piece of shit, I'm going to shit on your grave for what you said, what you did to Santino. So he goes on his podcast, and he fucking straight up denies it, just saying, I did not do that. He obviously knew it was wrong and was embarrassed about it, so he just fucking flat out denied it. Like, I'm going to make something up 12 years later. And then during that same podcast, he said he was going to fucking slap me next time he sees me. And so that was like, okay, we'll see. Now, yeah, So then, you know, fast forward to like last year, I'm retired. I'm fucking, life after wrestling's wicked. You know, I got everything set up, everything that I dreamed about, I made a reality. Life's good. And Scott D'Amore said, hey, a buddy of mine needs, he's kind of in a tight place. He needs someone to do a signing in Detroit. And I'm like, oh man, I don't like doing that stuff. Like, I don't go to Comic Cons or anything like that. It's just, it's not for me. I would love to go see the boys, don't get me wrong, but I don't know, man. It's just,
you know, a lot of people I know who feel that way are glad if they go back. I'm just saying it might be worth doing. And also in regards to Cornette, I don't know about Robbie, but all my interactions with him have been positive. And it just seems like a strange, and it's same thing like you said, where people say he's a good guy. But let me ask you this. We've heard about wrestlers. We've interviewed many wrestlers, and we've heard about them getting heat, you know, what you guys call heat, for the stupidest of reasons. Did you get heat from people for being slapped by Jim Cornette and him moving on as a result?
No, not at all, actually, because there was a lot of guys at OVW that really didn't like him, and they really wanted him gone. So there, I kind of got over for it a little bit. And that was the thing, because I'm a wrestling purist, and I respect the generation before me. And that was what I said to him when I met him in Detroit. I said, you know what bothers me is that I didn't have a chance to learn from you. And I was hoping we could fucking laugh at this and walk away saying, fuck, that guy's not that bad. You know, we got off on the wrong foot. And I really wanted that. And I went up to him and I put my hand out. I said, Mr. Cornette, Anthony Carelli. And he fucking tried to cut a promo on me and insult me and walk away. Like saying, this guy is too much. So he looks at my hand. I'm holding my hand out. He goes, I'll tell you what. He goes, you did me a favor, because I was going to have a fucking heart attack because Johnny Ace trying to take my business. And he goes, you didn't do it on purpose. You just, you know, in business for yourself. You took advantage of an opportunity. You got a job for it that you didn't deserve. And you made a joke of my business. He goes, but you put your hand out like a man. He goes, we're even. And wait a second. We're not fucking even. Slap me, fucking crank call me. Now you insult me. We're 3-0. There's no way. So that was what I said to him. I said, you know what? Like, I really came here with good intentions, but fuck, I'll take it anywhere you want to go, motherfucker. You know what I mean? And
then he started yelling that you were threatening him. I've seen the video. It's insanity.
Yeah. So what I did was, because I remember when he threatened me on the podcast. So I told him, I listened to the whole podcast. I drove home from Detroit. It was like 4 hours. So I listened to the whole thing, and I found the part where he said he's going to slap me again. And I told my buddy, I go, fuck, put that audio clip in front of that video. Because then, you know, he's talking tough, saying he's going to slap me. And then he's like, oh, security, this man's trying to start a fight with me. And I don't know who the fuck was even there with the camera. Because we were walking in the corridor of the convention center, and there was nobody there. And I was just coming back from lunch, and he just happened to walk out the door. And I said, okay, I guess this is the time we're going to meet, you know? Because I never, honestly, never met him, you know, before or after.
Dude, at a wrestling convention, someone's always somewhere with a camera.
Yeah. I think this guy was like fucking quick draw Rick McGraw, man. Because honestly, the footage he got was like, not long after it started, you know. But you know what? It was funny. It was a relief because he pushed out like a bitch, right? And not honestly, for years and years and years, I said, just don't lower yourself to this guy. Who cares? You know what I mean? But I guess deep down inside, it did bother me because after he pushed out, it felt pretty good.
So at this time, you're in, to go back a little bit, you're in OVW with no contract, and you were doing like some kind of, was it like a Russian gimmick, right?
Yeah. So Rip Rogers just gives me the nickname Boris. And, and that was my nickname. Everyone in class called me Boris. And he said I looked like, I think, Boris Zukov or something. And so I'm like, Boris, what the fuck am I going to do with this? So I was like, what's the point of having a different gimmick name if everyone's going to refer to me as Boris? And then I'm like, wait a second. My first coach is Don Koloff. And I don't think there's been that combination of Boris Koloff. There's Boris Zukov and lots of Koloff.
Right.
So anyway, I asked my coach for the blessing. He gave it to me, and I became Boris Koloff. And then Paul Heyman one time was up in the crow's nest there watching our practice, and he just saw some of the stuff I was doing, and fucking life-changing moment for me. You know, this is Paul Heyman, right? I'm like, you know, green as goose shit. But I love Paul Heyman to this day, but not because of this opportunity, just because who he is. But he walks up to me in the parking lot after he waited all class. And he goes, can I talk to you? Because I'm thinking of starting you on OVW TV next week. And I'm just like, oh, no, it was in like a couple of days or something. And I'm just trying to contain. I'm losing my shit inside. I'm like, no, fuck, this is it. This is the beginning. This is the opportunity. This is the chance. This is happening. They're going to see. And he gave me this fucking destroyer character. He really talked to me about what he wanted. And even Boris Koloff was kind of, he was kind of comedic too. I did a good combination of shoot style and comedy. And yeah, after he told me, he goes, in 3 weeks, not one audience member is going to remember that you were doing anything corny or hokey. They will fucking fear you.
Hey guys, we know we have a lot of male listeners. And for those guys, do you remember the days that you were always ready to go?
Well, now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. So listen up. It's BlueChew.com. And guys, that is blue like the color blue.
It's a crazy thing. It's a chewable, and it's available from BlueChew.com. And it's got the same FDA-approved active ingredients that you find in Viagra and Cialis. You know they work. And like I said, it's a easy-to-take chewable.
Yeah, you can take it anytime. You can take it a day. You can take it at night. Full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Because let me just tell you something, an opportunity could arise at any time.
Well, for almost everybody except me, but let me tell you this, if in fact it did, you know, all I got to do is go online, because Blue Chew is prescribed online and it ships right to the door in a discreet package. You know, so there's no like in-person doctor visit. You don't have to be embarrassed or have that awkwardness waiting in the pharmacy. And it's a much easier way to kind of be always ready on the go.
And we all know, Matt, that you probably have had that awkward waiting in the pharmacy visit before. But nonetheless, Blue Chews are made in the USA. And since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they are cheaper than a pharmacy, which works out really good for your pocket.
You know, and it's, guys, this is a no-brainer. You know, if you've always kind of considered something, you know, to help you in this way, you know, Blue Chew is the way to go. You go to BlueChew.com and get your first shipment. Guess how much it is, Robbie?
How much is it,
Matt? It is free. It is free when you use our special promo code, Robbie. All you got to do is pay a measly $5 shipping for a free shipment of Blue Chew.
And that special promo code, Robbie, R-O-B-B-I-E. And notice how they made the code after my name and not Matt's.
Well, they actually want people to buy it. And don't, and don't just take our word for it. I know many people who have used it, and they love the Blue Chew. Again, that's Blue Chew, BlueChew.com. Promo code Robbie to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice. And man, we appreciate them sponsoring the podcast and being supporters of Why It Ended. And make sure to go to BlueChew.com. What's the promo code again?
R-O-B-B-I-E, Robbie.
It's amazing he has to spell out his own name. Try it today. BlueChew.com, promo code Robbie.
I'm a college graduate.
And
then how long after that did you get offered a contract?
Man, let's see here. Like months. Like 3-4 months.
And they said, wow. They said, we love your Russian, but guess what? you're now, Italian.
Yeah, well, that was an overnight thing. When I got hired, I had to go home to Canada to get my work visa. But when I came back, I was still Boris. And I was doing my thing as Boris. Because that's when Vladimir Kozlov came in. So we were tagging back at OVW. And one day, yeah, because the office would watch the television taping. So once you're on TV, you're in front of everyone's eyes. So I was the only non-contract guy on the TV show. And then one day I get a call from Mike Bucci in Nova. He was in talent relations. He was actually the guy that called me to hire me. I think I was his first hire that day. Me, Kofi, and Charles the Hammer Evans. And then he goes, yeah, he goes, your background's Italian, right? And I go, yeah. He goes, can you speak Italian? And I remember like a month before, Dusty Rhodes down at OVW, and he's telling the class, if they ever ask you if you can do anything, you fucking say yes. And then you better fucking figure out how to do it. And before you have to do it. So my Italian was very limited. I just memorized like a tourist tape I used to play in the car on the way to work. And I just said some lines off the fucking tape. And I could just see them. I could just see them looking around at each other at a boardroom table going, I don't know, it sounds like Italian. I'm pretty good. I don't know. And that was it. The next day, they flew me out to best day. My passport came, FedEx, went to the airport, flew me to Milan. I got there on Sunday, and Monday morning, go to the building, and literally as I walk in the door, Arn Anderson goes, you're going to have a good day, kid, joining the IC strap today. And I'm like, what the fuck did he just say? Did he just say I'm winning the IC strap? Like, is this a rip? I'm looking around, and then, you know, they took me aside, and Vince would like to speak with you. And I'm like, what the fuck? This is crazy. And that was it, man. Then, like, then a few hours later, it's on YouTube. You know, I did do it.
So your plan was working.
Yeah, yeah. And then, yeah, but that's what I said to Mike Bucci. I'm like, what's going to happen to Boris? He goes, fuck Boris. This is an idea from Vince. And, yeah, and then Santino was born, and to this day, the vast majority of people I know me as Santino.
And was Santino always supposed to be such a funny guy? Like, was that Vince's idea from the get-go?
No, he's supposed to be this little spark plug baby face. And what happened was, I show up out of the crowd. It was a flawed concept a little bit from the beginning to be a genuine baby face. Because one, I come out of the crowd. And yeah, they said I was a guy who was doing some training. There's no way I should be any WWE superstar. This is supposed to be the cream of the crop. And I start winning a few matches here, you know, O'Connor rolls and this and that and small packages and all that kind of stuff. And the audience is like, look, don't fucking tell us what we're supposed to like. It was one of the first times I saw the audience reject something that they were being force-fed. And there was one pay-per-view with Umaga. He's beating the shit out of me. And they're like, one more time, like, you know, kill him, basically. And I'm like, damn, these people don't like me at all. And then they basically, I was told afterwards that the conversation was, well, let's turn him heel. And if that doesn't work, then too bad, so sad. See you later.
But it did work because you after turning heel, you actually got, you were used against guys like Lawler and Piper. And of course, that moment with Stone Cold Steve Austin, like somebody up there liked you. Who was it that was in your corner? Because there's somebody who loves some Santino Marella.
Yeah. So the three people that I know, well, one was Vince, I made him pop. He thought the accent and the way I acted was funny. That's really all you need. But then also, Arn Anderson, John Cena, Pat Patterson, like that click, they got it. So they liked it, and that's it, man. I popped the right group, you know?
Yeah, and was this, when you're saying you popped them, you know, was this, and that is the right group. You talk about guys with stroke, Cena, of course, Vince is the number one, Patterson. Was this, I've heard this about you, that you were really funny behind the scenes. So even before you became this comic figure, were you kind of cracking people up behind the scenes?
Yeah, you know what? I'm goofy and I'm honest and I like to believe that some of my jokes are, I like shock value jokes and I'll say shit that catches you off guard. Or, I don't know. I just want more of the boys. And when I was there in the beginning, there seemed to be a generation of a resentment locker room culture where a lot of guys were like, fuck this guy's making all this money, and you know, we're gonna do the job again, what the fuck. And you know, there was a little bit of that, and I'm like, I'm like, guys, we're in the WWE. This is fucking amazing. Huh? Beat me all fucking day. This is awesome. You know what I mean? And that was my attitude for 10 years. It was an honor and a privilege, and I loved being there. And I don't think I ever complained ever, man. Even when I had to dress like a woman.
Well, that was what I was actually going to ask you. When you won the Intercontinental title so quick, like, did anybody try and mess with you or give you shit early on because of that? Such a big push.
Well, there was a couple guys at OVW that, you know, I shot with and, you know, took them down, dominated a little bit, bigger guys. And, you know, national judo champion and not too bad, but there were guys that were like, what the fuck, who's this guy? And then they try and put me through the ringer and they realize, oh, this guy's all right, man. He can go. Who was telling me that? Somebody was telling me that recently too. Who's that? Who the fuck was it? Oh, Carlito. Sorry. Chavo. I was with Chavo this weekend and he told me his rendition of the whole thing. He's like, yeah, we're like, who the fuck's this guy, man? You know? And then he goes, yeah, then we fucking saw this guy's, you know, like, they were trying to get me smashed. And I was just drinking and I was having a fucking awesome time. And the plan wasn't working. And I'm like, fucking more shots. And I'm like, there's nothing they're going to do to me worse than I've done to myself, right? Like, I went to fucking university. So we just partied and I wanted to live the rock star gimmick a little bit when I was there. And I partied a little bit at the beginning just to say I did, you know. And they were like, okay, this guy's cool. He's down to throw down.
So even though you started with this, you know, baby face underdog deal with Umaga, you got turned heel and that worked. But you really found your niche, as you said. You found your voice and really connected with the fans with the humor, with the you know, the cobra and the fast walking. And it seems to me that a lot of that was something that you tried or run past them and you created. Would you give yourself credit for coming up with a lot of those funny things that people remember?
Yeah. Like the unibrow is my idea. The speed buff is my idea. The only problem is Vince loved it and made me do it for a long time. I didn't want to do it for that long, but again, I popped the right guy. But in the beginning, you know, like I had Brian go, and he would write stuff for me. And then as I was able to bring it to life, you know, the way Santino would, then they would, you know, give me bullet points. And then they would kind of tell me what they wanted me to say. And they had a lot more confidence and faith over the years. So, you know, a lot of it was my creation.
And when you look back, what do you have a favorite creation that you came up with? Was it the Cobra? Was it the speed walking?
The Cobra, some drunk guy in a bar in Japan showed me the Cobra. I wish I could say it was mine, but I was shown the Cobra. Even the trombone, the only move I ever stole wrestling was a fucking trombone from ODB.
What about setting the record for the shortest Royal Rumble appearance?
Now, that was a theme of mine, to take lemons and make lemonade, you know? So they told me it was going to be a quick one, and I'm like, well, with Dean Malenko, I said, can I break the record? Can I try? And he's like, let me go ask. And he came back and said, yep, you're good. So I orchestrated the fucking fastest way to do it, and we hit it. It was actually stressful because you had to be perfect, executional.
What was the previous record before you?
It was 2 point something.
And what did you get? What was yours?
1.9 or something. But it was like, if I teeter-tottered on the rope for a second, it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
So it was, Kane was right there too. Kane was perfect.
And, you know, you went, you did some SmackDown and you went to Raw and you won the United States championship. What was there a certain, besides the first title reign, what was your favorite, like maybe title run or run that you had there in WWE?
Well, the first time I won the Intercontinental, when I debuted, I was unconscious when I won it. you know, Bobby put me on top. And the second time, I was unconscious because Mickie James hit me with something, best pin Mickie. It was like both titles were on the line. So she wakes me up, goes, hey, we won. You're the champion again. So they were great. And that's actually my favorite title. But I was unconscious, you know. So the first time I hit the tag team, I hit the Cobra. The winner title was the tag team championships. And then, of course, the U.S. championship was like a nice professional recognition on my own. Kind of later in my career, too. Because, you know, it's peaks and valleys, man. You could have a three-month run and a six-month lull and a three-month run. You know what I mean? It comes and goes. It's cyclical. No, for some people. Some people are good. They're main events all the time. Some guys come and go, you know.
Well, it's
like gender.
Oh, yeah. It's an interesting thing if you think about what the lesson is for other wrestlers, because other wrestlers might get, you know, asked to be a woman or asked to do a tuxedo match or whatever and kind of boo-boo face. But you seemed, I guess you, what you're saying is the secret to your success is embracing everything you were given and going to the moon with it.
1,000%, 1,000%. You want a tuxedo match? I'm going to give you the fucking most hilarious tuxedo match in history, or I'll try my best. And you know what? Like, I don't know if it's a mind game, if they're trying to test me. But if they are, they're going, fuck, this guy doesn't sell. He's just knocking it out of the park. Or that's just what came up organically, and I just still tried my best to knock it out of the park. To be honest, my performance as Santina is probably some of my best work in terms of just being this other character and like bringing it to life the best I could, really.
So you were two, and while you were that, you were two-time Miss WrestleMania, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And what are the duties of Miss WrestleMania?
Yeah.
There's not too many duties, I think.
Hey, so what happened is that you were going well. Things seemed to be really going well for you. And it seems almost all of a sudden that on July 6th, 2014, you announced your retirement at a house show. What were the injuries that led up to that retirement? And do you think maybe you should have got a better send-off than that?
Yeah, well, okay, I'll explain. Yeah, so it was wear and tear. I injured my neck in university while wrestling one time. I had a slipped disc that ended up calcifying and becoming bone, and it was touching my spinal cord. And you know, I protected it my entire career until it just reached that critical point that I couldn't protect it anymore, and it was bad. So what happened was I had to take some time off. It was the third time I had to take a little break because my neck. Like, I took off a month here, a month there, and then I had to take some time off and potentially get surgery. So it was in Toronto. I wanted to address the audience in my real voice, but they said I had to be in character. And I just said, look, I didn't know I was retiring at the time. What I said was, I don't know what the future holds, but I said, I'm going to try and get, you know, I'm going to get surgery and try and come back. If I can't come back, the only regret I have in this business is that I was never introduced as being from Canada, Mississauga, Canada, Ontario. Because I'm a proud Canadian and you know, the world knows me as being from Italy. I just wanted the Canadians to know, not the whole world, just my fellow Canadians. Like, hey, I'm one of you guys, you know? And that was my last promo. It turned out that now I think that actually was my, like, I don't think I wrestled after that for WWE.
And did you want to wrestle after that? Or do you feel like it was time to stop?
You know, well, I had the surgery. And then, you know, everything was going good. I had a titanium plate inside my neck. And believe it or not, fucking two screws. One screw came out and one loosened. So they had to have, like, an emergency surgery and take all the stuff out 3 months after surgery. So that was, like, a heavy-duty setback because you're going in, you're cutting through the scar tissue and making it, you know, it became a... So that really prolonged my recovery. And to be honest, it just got to the point where it wasn't getting good enough. I mean, now, you know, I'm comfortable now, day-to-day life, I coach judo, and I fight kids, and, you know, I could do, like, I could let them throw me and stuff. And I'll have a, you know, couple matches a year for something special if it comes up. But there's no way I could go, and my matches are designed, you know, they're tag matches, and I'm doing a little shine, a little comeback, you know, that kind of thing. I'm not in there taking power bombs.
Do you miss being on the road full time, or you say, or are you pretty set with where you're at now?
I miss the boys. I do miss the road. I enjoy the road. I enjoy driving. I enjoy being places I've never been before. I enjoy shooting the shit with four guys in Denny's and, you know, popping huge, you know, just having funny conversations and that kind of stuff, you know. But I'm also 44, and I'm pretty content, because there's a lot of things, man, that I never got to do because I was on the road. Like, I mean, gosh, not to mention my daughter, you know, from being in grade, shit, what grade was she in? Oh, 7, she would have been 12, 6. From grade 6 to finishing high school, you know, while I'm on the road and stuff. But anyway, yeah, I never went camping before. I never went canoeing, and then I enjoy the outdoors tremendously. I never saw myself as a coach, but I fucking love coaching. And yeah, I got married, you know, I got a baby on the way. I got a garden.
Do you have a garden, Matt?
I do not have a garden. I'm not as well-rounded as Santino Marella, the Renaissance man. Hey, so when you left, you were injured and you weren't sure you were done 100%. But at some point you got your release, one of those big cut days, you know, you got your release with 7 other guys. Was it a surprise? What was that like? Who called you?
Yeah. So what they were going to do, was for every year you have, like on injury time, like a soccer game, they add the time onto your contract. They have the right to do that. So they told me they're going to, you know, tack on the year or two to my contract. And I was like, okay, that's cool. But I called them and I said, hey, like, it's, you know, it's been a couple of years. How long do you want to wait until we give a verdict here? Because I can't really wrestle. And I said, can I come back as like a GM, a manager or something backstage? I don't care. I'll do whatever. I don't want to, you guys are paying me. I have to stay home. Put me to work. Right. and then I guess they said, we don't need him. So they said, you know what? We're not going to extend that contract. So effectively, I guess that's it. You're done. And it was crazy feeling. I remember this. God, man, I'll never forget. Like my hearing, I heard the whole neighborhood, like the sound. It's like having your headset, your headphones on, and you take them off and you listen to the real sound of the, you know what I mean? Like the real environment sound. It was weird. And I'm like, I'm me again. I'm the guy that I was right up until the day I got signed by WWE. And now I'm that guy again. That guy fucking made it. That guy's wicked. That guy got me there, you know? So you got to remember it like that. A lot of guys panic and think, what am I going to do? I'm like, buddy, we can do anything, man, you know? And I already had a business up and running, because I knew my neck was getting bad. So I kind of had that going as well. So that plan kind of worked out too.
And that business is what, your school, Battle Arts in Toronto?
Yeah, Battle Arts Academy. Where are you training?
And is there any, you want to talk about that a little bit?
So when I was in Japan, the pro wrestlers and the MMA fighters, they train together. The pro wrestlers can go fight in Pride, and sometimes they did fight in Pride. And the guys in Pride would go do pro wrestling matches sometimes. So I really loved it. Like, these guys train, like, they're all doing 500 squats, and they look at it like they're professional athletes. And that's the way I wanted to look at it, too. So I met when I was in Japan one time having lunch, I was with Mr. Ishikawa. And he was the owner of the original Battle Arts where I was. He's a master instructor of submissions. And I'm like, they would eat this guy up back home. They'd love it, right? He's so unique. So I said, if I ever opened up a school, he's like, I'm there. And I'm like, done. That's all I needed to hear. So I got the ball rolling and I opened it up. And we do, it's not an MMA gym. We do three Olympic sports. We do amateur wrestling, boxing and judo, and kickboxing and Muay Thai and stuff. Companies come and rent out my facility and stuff. So it's it ended up being a whole other revenue stream that I didn't really fully consider in the beginning.
Do you have any social media maybe that you could point people to, or a website for people to get information in case they want to get trained by the great Santino Marella?
Promote or anything?
Yeah, I'm at Milan Miracle. You know, I kind of filter everything through there. So if something's happening at the gym, I'll do it there. It's Battle Arts MMA or something.
That's quite the businessman, but you can get everything. If you need to reach Santino, Anthony, or if you want to find out about Battle Arts, you can find him, of course, at Milan Miracle. And we really want to thank you for
Google it.
What's that?
I said Google it.
Just Google it.
Yeah, right.
Come on, guys. If you can't find it, you don't want to go. That's all I'm saying. And we really want to thank you for joining us. And when you look back at your WWE career, do you have any regrets? Is there something you wish you would have done that you didn't get your chance to do?
Not really. I think, you know, I would have liked to have won the heavyweight championship kind of like in a crazy moment, fluke match kind of thing. And then, hold on a second. Come on, buddy, come on. And then, you know, lose it a week or two later just to have that moment to make it official and certified. But that's now we're being like selfish, you know.
Well, Robbie, we got everything that we wanted from Mr. Anthony Corelli, but I'm still going to call him Santino Marelli.
Yeah, I forgot. So he's actually Canadian, but he became a star by playing Italian, but he started his wrestling career being a Russian.
Yeah.
Did I get that right?
I think that sounds good. It's a lot like, you know, Jinder Mahal is Canadian, right? But, like, he's Indian.
I guess I don't know. I don't get it. I think I did know he was Canadian, but I forgot. But nonetheless, super cool dude. He's super chill. He's happy with where he's at in his life. And I enjoyed listening to his story.
And he could kick both of our asses, I'm 95% sure.
But here's the real question. What if you were in that Japanese bar and someone taught you the Cobra?
Man, I would be the most over guy in professional wrestling history. Hey,
you never know, man.
You never know.
Hey, you got a bigger hand than him.
It's true. It's true. I'm a pretty large person, as you found out. Hey, so what a great interview on Why It Ended. Of course, thank you everybody for supporting us on Why It Ended. And of course, last week's Jimmy Corderas interview, or this week's Santino Marella interview. We got lots of big names coming up. And how can they follow all the Why It Ended happenings, Mr. Robert Strauss?
Twitter and Instagram at Why It Ended. WhereItEnded.com is our YouTube. And then, of course, guys, our Patreon page. You know, we tweet it all the time. It's our pinned tweet. You could Google it. All the support, we appreciate it. You're getting episodes early. You're getting bonus episodes. And then Pro Wrestling Tees, get our shirts. And then, of course, follow me at Robbie E. Impact on Twitter, Real Robbie E. on Instagram, and then Matt Coon Music on Twitter and Instagram, which for some reason he never uses.
Well, I we've been over this. Isn't Instagram just for good-looking people?
Well, I tag you in everything, and it's like I don't get likes from you or anything. It's kind of annoying.
It does give me like a little bit of happiness that I like follow one person, and I've got like, you know, 150 followers. It's fantastic.
Well, because I tag you in everything on the Why It Ended page.
Oh, it's all Robbie E., of course. And if you want to find out what Robbie E.'s up to, you can go to his website, which is...
Robbie Pitt. Yep, there is. Robbie-E.com.
Why do you have a hyphen? Did someone give you that advice to put a hyphen in your...
No, I think it was taken. You know, at one point I was a pretty important guy, I'm not going to lie, you know, so someone already had one.
Well, all things change, and... but not everything changes here on Why It Ended. And I guess we're going to see you next week on...
Why...
It
Ended. I beat you already.
Oh, damn it.